Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues, Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
Well, we've heard what role religion played in Tuesday's election. How did social conservatives fare? Joining us now, Colleen Carol Campbell. She's host of the television and radio program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book, The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
What do you think President Obama should learn from Tuesday's election results?
Well, he should learn that Americans are unhappy with the course that he's been charting for the country in the last 2 years. They feel he's out of touch, he's spending too much, his values are not their values, and they don't want him to fundamentally transform America as he promised to do with his inauguration. They actually want him to reduce spending and listen to the will of the people. That's what he should learn. I don't think that's what he has learned. I think his comments, however conciliatory, the day after the election, still showed that he didn't get it. For instance, he said that, changing the substance of his Obamacare legislation would be, to do so would be misinterpreting Tuesday's results. I'm not sure what he bases that on, because there's quite a bit of anger over Obamacare and all sorts of other things, and his approval ratings are very low, yet he consistently frames this as a question of Americans simply not understanding the good things he's doing for them, and seems to interpret this as a communications problem when, in fact, I think it's a problem of substance. We do know what he's doing, and we don't like it.
Is it realistic to think that social conservatives on issues like abortion, gay marriage, etc., can work with President Obama?
Well, we always would want to work with any leader in power, and it's always worth making the effort. But no, I don't think it is very realistic to expect any concessions from this president on those hot button issues. He campaigned as one who was going to bring the country together. We saw basically from the very start of his administration, from January 23rd, 2009, when he reversed the Mexico City policy and resumed federal taxpayer funding of abortion overseas, that this is not a man who believes in compromise on these issues, and he's not sort of Mr. Purple as he portrayed himself. He's blue through and through. He's a hard left partisan. He's an ideologue, and so I don't think it's likely that we're going to find places to compromise. That doesn't mean we don't try, and I think with the glut of pro-life Republicans who won seats, House seats, especially in Tuesday's election, there will be a lot more pushback when he tries to promote a radical social agenda. But I don't think that means that he's going to cave and decide that he doesn't care about these issues after all. I think he actually cares about them quite a bit and sort of hid that during his presidential campaign. He may go into hiding a bit with these issues over the next 2 years, but if he wins a second term, I think we're going to see a president much more radical on these issues than anything we've seen thus far.
Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. We're coming to you live this Thursday afternoon. It's November the 4th. When we come back, a few more minutes with her, a question that I have. President Obama, before the midterm elections, told bloggers that his views on same-sex marriage could evolve. I'd like to know what Colleen thinks about that, especially with regard to the what sending those judges in Iowa packing. We'll be right back.
Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues, Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues, Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
These days, value affords me a new attitude. It lets me appreciate that I can start my day with more than a $6 cup of coffee, and that I officially have permission to skip dinner out to spend time talking with my family over Casserole Inn. Concordia Publishing House offers Christian products that help me focus on what matters most. Visit any of the three Concordia bookstores downtown in Kirkwood and on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton, or shop online at cph.org and find out what a new value attitude looks like in your life.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. live on most smartphones? Just go to the Listen Live page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the smartphone link, and you can listen on your smartphone weekday afternoons between 3 to 5 Central. Old Theology, New Technology, Issues Etc. now broadcasting live to the world on most smartphones. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting some post-election analysis with Colleen Carroll Campbell of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. She spoke earlier about the president's general reaction to the elections. There's something that the president said before the midterm elections. He was speaking to a group of bloggers, and it had to do with the issue of same-sex marriage. He said, Colleen, that his view on this already kind of, I'm in favor of same-sex unions, but not gay marriage by the name of marriage. He says that his views on same-sex marriage could evolve. What do you think?
Well, he basically said that he used an interesting quote. It was something about how he'd been following the trend lines on this, and it looked like things were trending toward more acceptance of this, and seemed to indicate, without explicitly saying so, that's sort of what he's looking at to decide where he's going to come down on the issue. So he didn't hide his pragmatic political approach on this. On this question, he didn't even seem to be trying to hide that. Again, I've never been convinced that same-sex marriage is something that he strongly opposes. I've never heard him offer a rationale for his opposition other than, well, that's marriage and civil unions are fine. And there's just not a lot of clarity in his position. So I wouldn't be surprised if it changes, or if it already has changed and it's going to publicly change as the polls trend toward more support for same-sex marriage. I mean, we already heard him on Father's Day, for instance, praising the ideal of two fathers as equal to the ideal of married mother and father in terms of raising children. We've heard this kind of rhetoric. He's put activist gay and lesbians in prominent positions throughout his administration and hailed them as such. And, you know, he's pushing hard to overturn the military's don't ask, don't tell policy. So this is someone who I think when he calls himself a staunch ally of the LGBT community, I think he's right. I think he is. And as I said, I've never been convinced he really did have a deep opposition to same-sex marriage. So if it evolves right around the time the polls evolve too, and he thinks he's got enough people on the side of same-sex marriage that it's no longer much of a political risk, I would not be surprised.
On that subject, Iowa voters recalled three Supreme Court judges who voted in favor of same-sex marriage. What's your reaction?
Well, I think it was a good move for democracy. I think it was interesting to see the reaction to that move among voters. There was all sorts of hand-wringing in the mainstream media from purportedly objective journalists about the politicization of the judiciary, how you know, these right-wing Christians are dragging politics into the courts, which is where it does not belong, and punishing these poor judges who are simply interpreting the law. Well, you know, all you have to do is read the Iowa case or the California case more recently on Prop 8 or really any of these same-sex marriage cases to see that the judges are the ones who made this a political issue, who brought politics into the chambers and made activist decisions based, you know, basically on nothing more than their own belief that this is progress and therefore we need to accept it. And it was very similar, some of these decisions, to the Roe v. Wade decision about abortion, in that it was very unclear as to where they found a legal basis for the rulings that they handed down. So I think it's sort of sweet justice that now voters get a chance to pronounce on these judges and what they think of activist judges. And I think it's rather silly to see so many liberal pundits who support same-sex marriage, you know, wailing and moaning about, you know, politics shouldn't mix with the law and with the judiciary, because, of course, we know they're only too happy for the two to mix when the judges are on their side on issues like same-sex marriage.
Quickly on the kind of the two last questions put together, President Obama starts run for president again. He really has to now, and he's going to have to go to Iowa. And I wonder if he's going to hold the line on an evolving view of same-sex marriage when he appears in campaign mode in front of Iowa voters.
Yes, I was rather surprised he even made those comments to bloggers, given what he's up against. Of course, that was before the election, I believe. So maybe he's been chastened now, and he'll go back into campaign mode, which for Obama is safe mode, moderate mode, you know, healing the partisan divide mode. I don't know if he can carry that off so well a second time around in places like Iowa. I think, you know, the gauzy hope and change rhetoric, people kind of know what's behind that now. They know it generally translates into a pretty radical social agenda and out-of-control government spending. So it no longer has that sort of, you know, project anything you want onto that rhetoric character anymore. So I think he's going to have a tougher time. On the other hand, I think he's a charismatic, talented, eloquent politician, and I don't think anyone should underestimate how well he can do when he's under fire and on the stump and delivering vague platitudes and lofty rhetoric, which is his talent, and it's obviously more of his talent than his governing. So, you know, you combine that with the fact that voters tend to be fickle and tend to forget that this is the same guy who promised me this 4 years ago and didn't deliver. And, you know, I think voters may be willing to give him a second chance, especially if he presents himself as a moderate over the next 2 years. But again, I don't think that means he is a moderate by any means. I think he'll still be advancing his agenda quietly through executive orders and the like. And again, I think if he gets a second term, all bets are off. We are going to see a very radical Obama, unlike, I think, even what we've seen these first 2 years. And I think we need to remember that going into this presidential campaign, because we're going to hear a lot about how he's the voice of sanity in this country. But I think we're going to see a very different picture if he wins a second term and no longer has to worry about appeasing voters at all.
Finally, Colleen, you wrote something recently for The Washington Post about Catholic voters and the life issue. What did you write about, and what kind of reaction have you gotten from this piece?
Well, the Washington Post has an on-faith blog with regular panelists, religion commentators. The question this week was about Pope Benedict XVI's comments on Catholics voting, which were also echoed by Cardinal-designate Archbishop Raymond Burke. We still call him Archbishop because he was Archbishop here in St. Louis. That's his emeritus title. Both of them reiterated that when Catholics go into the voting booth, they need to take their Catholic identity with them, and that means putting respect for the dignity of the human person before other considerations, including the economy or immigration or their favored energy policy, healthcare, any of it. And that means not supporting politicians who openly espouse abortion on demand as a policy solution. Of course, we know not all races are equal. Not every candidate is the perfect candidate. Sometimes you have to choose the lesser of two evils. But to support someone who is unyielding in his support for the destruction of unborn human life is a grave problem for Catholics. So the Pope Benedict XVI and Cardinal-designate Burke reiterated this. The question to the on-faith contributors was, you know, should Catholics be considering their voting a religious act? And my response was, we all walk into the voting booth with a religious worldview, with some kind of worldview, religious or not, and Catholics should bring their Catholic values with them. And the response says, you know, it's a mix out there, and Catholics are the ones who are most passionate about this issue. Some feel that, you know, anyone who gives them any suggestions as to their voting priorities is interfering with their freedom And many other Catholics are very proud of the Pope and the bishops who stand up on these issues and say, you know, you don't have to follow a certain party line, but you do have to defend human life in all your actions, including what you do in the voting booth.
Colleen Carol Campbell is host of a television radio program called Faith and Culture, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read her columns under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Colleen, thank you, and it was great to see you last week on the set of Faith and Culture.
You too, Todd. Thanks so much for stopping by. It was great.
Folks, if you appreciate Issues Etc., where Christianity meets culture, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. Any size gift is deeply appreciated. Now, we need to raise a little more than $68,000 to make budget in 2010. Issues Etc. has operated in the black for 2 years running since its return to the airwaves, entirely due to the generosity and the loyalty of our listeners. So we know that our listeners will see that $68,000 and our year-end budget and help us meet it yet. Again, you can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. Send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for thinking of us in the past and as we approach the end of this year. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, as we usually do on Fridays. That means we're going to assemble 4 bits of sound from Issues Etc. audio of this week, and we'll play it for you, and you get a chance to pick which one's going to be soundbite of the week. We'll give away an LPR bundle package to the best vote tomorrow on the program. Also, a rare pleasure to have Dr. Mike Horton on the program tomorrow of the White Horse Inn. We'll talk about the sufficiency of Scripture. Now, many affirm the authority of Scripture, and yet they will say with the same breath, sadly, that Scripture isn't enough. It needs to be supplemented by our reason, by our experience, by some other revelation from God. The Bible's fine, but we need to hear more from God, or maybe we already are hearing more from God. Does denying the sufficiency of Scripture also deny its authority? We'll answer that question tomorrow on Issues Etc. with Dr. Mike Horton of the White Horse Inn. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.